now here's your moderator, Dana Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Debbie, and welcome everybody to Minds Over Matter. Hope you're having a lovely week and getting ready for Halloween as much as is possible to get ready for Halloween this year. And we also hope you can spend an hour with us tonight because Minds Over Matter is an audience participation quiz program. So, of course, naturally, we're hoping for your participation out there. We don't require too much. Just settle back and give us a call if you so choose. If you'd like to answer one of our questions or have a question of your own, it's totally up to you. Those two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Again, that's area code 415-841-4134. Or toll-free. Yes, we still have a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. That is 866-798-8255. Our lines are almost all open right now, so it is a good time to get in. As I say every week, please call us as early as possible, and we will get you on. Sometimes we do get a little bit crowded toward the end of the show. We don't like leaving anybody hanging. So especially if you have a long question you'd like to ask us, try to get in as early as possible, because then we'll be able to do full justice to your question. May not be able to answer it, but we'll do full justice to it. And so again, that's 415-841-4134. We're toll-free, 866-798-8255. Just to remind you of our email address here at the show, that is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. So again, that is MINDSOVERMATTER1. That is the numeral 1. So that is mindsovermatter1@gmail.com. We don't read them, or I don't read them generally during the show, but they all get read. So feel free to contact us if you have a question or a comment. It's always great to hear from our listeners out there. And what else can I tell you? There is a live stream going on as we speak at kalw.org. So please feel free to listen to the show there. If the signal is a little bit weak in your area, you can always go online. It'll be as clear as a bell, which is more than I can say for our show from time to time. But again, that is kalw.org. And of course, the podcast should be available later on tonight. And Debbie will do her usual fine job, I'm sure. And that will also be at kalw.org and a lot of other places, but start with KALW. They could use the traffic. All right. All that being said, we're going to start with the round of introductions and a round of questions. I believe Kira and Lori are awaiting on Zoom. So I will jump into the void and read Kira's, which is due to an upcoming wind event, PG&E may be muting Kira Pace this evening.
Yeah, hopefully I'll get to speak some, get some of my big points out before I'm muted.
Be wind.
Yeah. So Lori Fisher has been working on his Halloween costume all week and thinks he's finally finished. He is simultaneously going as A, nervous beleaguered voter, B, a full-time pandemic avoider, and C, an East Bay wind walk-awayer. It's the easiest costume ever. Right now he looks like all of those things.
I do. Yep. And as usual, our moderator, Dana Rodriguez, will be giving away the good candy again this year in his socially distanced way. The trick-or-treaters may wave to the hobo on the porch, not realizing that this is his normal streetwear.
That's right. And so please feel free to come over to the house, and we have a lot of good candy for you. I don't know how many kids we're going to get this year. Some houses on the street have decorated for Halloween, and we will too, so we'll see. They usually truck them over from Oakland. We get about 1,000 kids about a block away. So we get the overflow, basically. So we might get, you know, a couple hundred. But we'll see what happens this year.
And you do give the good candy, right?
We do give the good candy. Yeah. Good. I don't want any broken windows. So anyway, all that being said, we will start with Kira Pace.
All right. I have a quick question followed by a list question. Here's my quick question. On the 29th of October, 1976, Margaret Hamilton, Tim Conway, Roz Kelly, Florence Henderson, Billy Barty, Betty White, Donnie and Marie Osmond, Billy Hayes' Witchy Poo from H.R. Puff and Stuff, and Kiss all performed on a Halloween special starring and named for what person?
Whoa. 76?
Right, 1976. This was a Halloween special that for a long time people thought was lost. but they recently found it. It has been located.
So give us the highlights again. Who's on this great list?
It's Margaret Hamilton reprising her role as the Wicked Witch, Tim Conway, Ros Kelly, Florence Henderson, Billy Barty, Betty White, Donny and Marie Osmond, Billy Hayes is Witchy Poo from H.R. Puffin Stuff, and then the rock band Kiss. So they were all on a show starring and named for what person?
So it's an individual. It's not a...
It is.
And did this person have a regular, like, variety show?
No, this person was a... this person was a regular on shows. This person was a... he was just one of those, like, 70s, like, famous for being famous personalities.
Not a singer or a comic, per se.
He's a comic, but... Okay. Not like a stand-up comic, as at least if he is, I'm not aware of his stand-up career.
I'm sorry, did you say this person had their own show at one time or didn't have their own show?
No, this person is a regular on a different show, or was a regular. Very well-known regular.
At Hollywood Squares, possibly?
Possibly.
Paul Lind? Is it Paul Lind?
It is Paul Lind. That's right. The Paul Lind Halloween special.
And
all those people. So the head writer was Bruce Valanche, and he was worried about Paul Lind carrying the show. So he just invited all these other celebrities to show up.
Oh, man.
Just utterly random assortment. But okay, so my list question for you is this. I am going to give you the titles of some Halloween-themed episodes of television shows. So you tell me what the television show is. I've got eight of them, eight episode titles. You just tell me the name of the show. The first Halloween themed episode is called Fonselectomy. So it's like tonsillectomy, but with an F. Fonselectomy. The next one is It's a Plastic Pumpkin, Louis Wang. It's a Plastic Pumpkin, Louis Wang.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is The Ghost of Clampett Castle. The Ghost of Clampett Castle.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth one is Tina and the Real Ghost. Tina and the Real Ghost. Number five is The Monster of Walnut Grove. Again, that's The Monster of Walnut Grove. The sixth is The Ghost of A Chance, and that's spelled C-H-A-N-T-Z, The Ghost of A Chance. Number seven is My Master, the Ghost Breaker. My Master, the Ghost Breaker. And number eight, last one, Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery. Corn with a K, Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery. So, Fonselectomy, It's a Plastic Pumpkin, Louis Wang, The Ghost of Clampett Castle, Tina and the Real Ghost, The Monster of Walnut Grove, The Ghost of A Chance, My Master the Ghost Breaker, and Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery. How many of those can you name?
All right. Well, we'll start with let's let Lori go, and then I'll see what I can do.
All right. Well, I have 2.5. How many are you giving us each?
I will give you whatever you can get.
Okay. I think Fonselectomy sounds like Happy Days.
It does, because it is Happy Days. Fonzie gets a tonsillectomy.
And I'll take the other piece of low-hanging fruit. The Ghost of Clampett Castle has to be the Beverly Hillbillies.
Beverly Hillbillies.
I'll leave the tougher one for Dana.
Go over the Walnut Grove, the title of the Walnut Grove one again, would you please?
It's just The Monster of Walnut Grove.
All right. So is that Little House on the Prairie?
I knew you would know that, or you would know that. Yes, it is.
Okay. And Tina, give me that one with Tina again.
Tina and the Real Ghost.
Now, this is way, way, way in the weeds. Is it Mr. T and Tina by any chance?
It's not.
Oh, I have a guess on that one. Dana, do you have another guess?
If you could go over the other ones once more.
The ones that are still left. It's a Plastic Pumpkin, Louis Wang. Tina and the Real Ghost. The Ghost of A Chance. My Master, the Ghost Breaker. And Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery.
Is My Master the Ghostbreaker, is that I Dream of Jeannie by any chance?
It is. Right. I Dream of Jeannie.
Nice.
Yes.
Right. There you go.
I'll take one more guess then. Is Tina and the Real Ghost Gilligan's Island?
It's not.
Oh, okay.
There's no Tina on Gilligan's Island.
The actress was named Tina, not the character.
Small difference.
Tina
okay.
Louise, yeah. All right. So leave the rest of them out there. And Lori, you go ahead.
I have a couple Halloween questions, too, in the spirit of the season. Mine are shorts, though. This is a list of three, so I'll give you one each. So these are movies in which they're not monster movies at all, but there's a Halloween scene in all of them. So I want to know the movie in which one of the characters is dressed up as, in the first one, Yoda. The second movie is, I'll describe how it's described in the movie, a terrible drunken ghost that has never been buried. And the third one is dressed up as a ham. So I'm looking for the movies in which someone was dressed as Yoda. Another one, somebody was dressed as a terrible drunken ghost that was never buried. And the third one is a ham. They're all really well-known movies.
Well, Scout, one each. Scout is dressed up as the ham in To Kill a Mockingbird.
That's correct. Right. Very nice. Give yourself a bell on that. I love her costume in that.
Right.
And she's saved by Boo Radley that night, I think.
Yes. From okay. Bob Yule. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Kira, you can have one of the two others.
I do not have one of the two others. Oh. I've neither.
Dana, you want one more?
Have to think about that. Just go. Okay. You might as well repeat them now.
Okay. So we're looking for movies in which there's a Halloween scene, kids trick-or-treating, and Dana got the ham. Scott plays the ham in To Kill a Mockingbird. It was a Halloween pageant. I'm looking for one in which someone is dressed as Yoda. Another one is someone is described as a terrible drunken ghost who's never been buried.
All right.
Well-known movies. They're great.
And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter. Are you there, caller? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
There we go. A Halloween theme. Name the... There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 films where Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi were in the same film.
All right. This comes up occasionally. So let's go with The Black Cat.
1.
The Raven.
2.
The Invisible Ray.
3.
Gift of Gab.
Well, you got that's probably the most obscure one, yeah.
Right. And let's see. Son of Frankenstein.
Good.
The Black Friday, 1940.
The only one where they actually do not share a scene.
Is it? Okay. And let's see, what else? Oh, of course, The Body Snatcher.
Okay, you got all but one.
And what's the one I'm missing here? Let me think for a second.
You're on such a roll, I'll give you a hint. Peter Lorre's in it, too.
Oh, is it the Boogeyman Will Get You If You Don't Watch Out?
No.
No,
Lugosi was not in Boogeyman.
Okay. It's a comedy, though, isn't it?
Yeah, here's your. You're doing so well, I'll give you a hint. Famous band leader, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Kay Kaiser, right?
There you go.
Can't remember the name of it, though.
You'll find out.
You'll find out. Okay.
Right. Very good.
Seven
bells for Dana.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I have a lot of questions tonight, so I'm going to give you 2 short ones and 1 long one just because I want to get the long one out of the way because I want people to guess at it. I'll start with the long one. How about that? And I found this article in Good Housekeeping because I read that every week or every month. And they did a survey of parents, and the parents were asked, and this is kind of a variation on a question I ask just about every year, at least the last few years. The parents were asked, what candy, of the candy that your kids get on Halloween, what kinds do they throw out and not eat? The kids throw it out, they just are not interested in it at all. So what candy is most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween? Not by parents, by kids. So what are the 10 types of candy that are most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween and not eaten. So this is from Good Housekeeping magazine. I'll give you each two guesses.
Well, Kira, you had mentioned what candy you think kids don't eat. We're having a brief chat before the
show.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's going to be top 10. Okay. I'm just saying right. Kids don't eat Snickers anymore. But candy corn is my first guess.
You know, it's very strange, and I would have thought it would have been in the 10, but it's not.
Okay.
So, how about the two that occurred to me right away? I don't even know if anybody buys them. One is Turkish taffy, and the other is saltwater taffy.
Neither one.
Wow.
What about like sweet tarts, like the Necco wafer sweet tarts?
No.
Plastery kind of candy.
And just to remind you, I'm looking for brand names here. So what are the 10 brand name candies that are most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween and because they have no interest in eating them?
How about Raisinettes or Raisins?
No, not Raisinettes either.
Debbie's guess.
Yeah.
That's a good guess. How about Goobers?
Not Goobers.
And Good and Plenty.
Not Good and Plenty. Mm-mm.
Those are so awful.
I know.
Which are the circus peanuts? Is that their name?
Circus peanuts is one of them.
Oh, yes. Right.
But wait, okay, so how old is this article? Because who is buying circus peanuts for Halloween?
It's a cheap candy, and sometimes people will just buy it just to have extra candy there.
Dana's still getting the 1958 Good Housekeeping. That
I see circus peanuts is still around in the stores.
So okay. are a bunch of them kind of like that in the circus candy era?
No.
And
circus
is it true?
Peanuts is the oldest, I think, of them. What's that? I'm sorry.
Is it true that your grocery store is in 1976?
No, I wish it was because the prices would be much, much cheaper. But no. No, circus peanuts you find in like the dollar store, let's see, the dollar store or you know, some off market type of place.
How about Zagnuts?
No, not Zagnuts.
Okay.
So again, according to a survey done of parents in Good Housekeeping, what candy is most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween because they have no interest in it at all? So far we have circus peanuts. All right. Now the other two questions are short. I found a map, a map that showed the most popular Halloween candy in each state. So, but I'm going to break it down just to one question here. California, Delaware, Florida, and South Carolina all have the same favorite non-chocolate Halloween candy. Okay? So it's non-chocolate, so eliminate all the chocolate stuff. So California, Delaware, Florida, and South Carolina all have the same favorite candy, and it's non-chocolate for Halloween. So what I'll give you each one guess.
I'm going to guess.
Airheads?
What is it? Say it again.
Airheads?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay.
Skittles.
Skittles is correct.
Nice.
All right. Now, one more thing. I'm going to play a clip, but neither of you can guess on it. So this is for the audience. Okay?
Okay.
Sure. It's 9 seconds long. It's very quick. One of the great jokes of all time. But it has bearing on Halloween. So listen to this. Listen carefully. It's 9 seconds long. Tell me what movie it's from. All right? And who's talking?
Oh, you'll think I'm crazy, but in a half an hour, the moon will rise, and I'll turn into a wolf.
You and 20 million other guys.
Listen.
All right.
Great.
So leave that out there, and that's for the audience. Tell me what movie that is from and who was talking there. And in the meantime, let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, this is Ed. How are you?
Hi, Ed.
So, who was the only U.S. president that served two terms, but not consecutive?
Grover Cleveland. Grover
Cleveland. Yeah, Grover Cleveland. Very smart. All right, it's very simple. All right, now talking about Halloween, it seemed like an awful lot of evidence that Halloween was celebrated as far as 5,000-6,000 years ago in ancient Egypt. Until present, actually. This is in Egypt, just as it is in the United States. All right. Well, talking about Egypt, how many times is the name of Egypt mentioned in the Bible?
So only you would have counted, but let's see.
You talking about the word?
Within 100.
Oh, within
100? Egypt?
Oh, my.
Within 100, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of Egypt in the, of course, in the
Bible,
earlier part of the Old Testament.
How many hundred do you think?
Yeah.
800. I'll go 850.
No, less than that.
Less than that. All right.
Almost 700. Almost 700. Yep. Almost 700. Okay. Second question to that. Who is the only biblical woman mentioned in the Quran?
Mary?
Can you slow down a bit? That's true. She is the only biblical woman. Yeah, as I always told you, the Quran is nothing, really very slight version from the New Testament. Really it is. If you read it, it's both the same stories, the same laws, the same everything. But always good show. Really good to talk to you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7 p.m. Hope you're enjoying the show. Panel tonight, that would be Kira Pace, technical editor, and Lori Fisher from Diablo Valley College. And I'm your moderator, Dana Rodriguez, and you're listening to us on 91.7 FM. That is KALW, your local public radio station. And if you'd like to join us, the two numbers are area code 415-841-4134. Or toll free, 866-798-8255. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hey, this is Fred in West Virginia.
Hi, Fred.
I think Starburst would be thrown away by children.
Nope.
No? Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so my questions are regarding a Netflix film out last week by the very hot Sacha Baron Cohen, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. Okay, mm-hmm. So in the film, and even if you didn't see it, perhaps you could guess, the writer Aaron Sorkin had the William Kunstler character say to the bound Bobby Seale character a line, a question to him that added to the recurrent timeliness of this story.
Does this make sense? Can you rephrase the question, Fred? No.
Okay. Okay, the William Kunstler character in the Trial of the Chicago Seven says a line to the bound and gagged Bobby Seale character that probably did not actually happen in the trial, but it added timeliness to the story of the Chicago Seven.
Did he say Black Lives Matter in some way?
No.
Okay.
Bobby Seale character is bound and gagged.
Right.
And the William Kunstler character comes up and asks him a question.
While he's bound and gagged.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you think it's not in the transcript because it seems so current?
Yeah. Yes. It adds a timeliness and a big twang that I feel Aaron Sorkin added.
I do not know. Kira, do you have a guess?
No.
Okay.
I saw the film, so I should know.
What would you say?
I said, I saw the film, so I should know.
Oh, what did he say? You remember he's bound and he has a terrible gag in his mouth.
Right.
What does the William Kunstler character say to him?
I don't remember.
Nope.
He asks him, can you breathe?
Oh.
All right.
It adds a certain, it's very disturbing. So Abby Hoffman is played by Sacha Baron Cohen. Mm-hmm. And in the postscript, they mentioned that the actual distribution of Abby Hoffman's most popular book will probably never be known. Why?
Because it will just get stolen?
Exactly, because the title of it would steal this book.
Right.
One more question in that regard. Sacha Baron Cohen seems to have a little trouble with Abby Hoffman's accent. As you know, Sacha Baron Cohen is British. What accent is he trying to do? Where's Abby Hoffman from?
He's from New York. I want to say Brooklyn or the Bronx. He's on the East Coast someplace.
Isn't he like Pittsburgh or something?
No.
Okay. I thought he was
Boston? Is he Massachusetts, Cambridge?
Boston. Yeah. He just hacked that accent. I think it's hard for Brits to do a Boston accent. But, All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred.
Happy Halloween to you.
All right. Bye-bye. You too. And feel free to give us a call, 415-841-4134, with a question or answer, or toll-free, 866-798-8255. Kira, it's your turn.
All right. Another list, but I don't feel like doing it. So I'm going to give you a lead-in question followed by a question. The lead-in is this. In Lori Lieberman's Killing Me Softly with His Song, which was, you know, recorded to great acclaim by Roberta Flack and later by the Fugees. So Killing Me Softly with his song, who is he and what was his song? It's a real person. It's a real song. Want to know both pieces. Who is he and what is his song? And I'll give you a chance to answer that before I ask the next half.
So Lori Lieberman writes this with a certain singer-songwriter in mind?
Yes. She had just been to a performance of his, I believe, at the Troubadour in L.A. And although I could have that piece wrong, look it up, people. It's an actual person. Like, she was affected by this person's performance of a song.
Is this – can you give us a year for this?
I cannot. I can look that up in a second, though.
All right. And is this person just die, or is this person still alive?
He's still alive.
Okay.
I think it's in the 70s sometime. That's what I would guess. So the two people occur to me. The first one, for some reason, is Kris Kristofferson. Got it?
It's not Kris Kristofferson, and the concert was 1971. So there you go. And
how about James Taylor, then?
Not James Taylor. Yeah. Those are both very good guesses.
And it's a singer-songwriter that she was singing it to, a male singer-songwriter?
Yeah, or about, but yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So it's post Cat Stevens, for instance.
Well, post and pre, but it's not Cat Stevens.
Okay.
And would it make any sense that Roberta Flack had this person in mind when she was singing it, or would that be kind of a contradiction in some way?
No, I don't think it would have been a contradiction.
All right. Leave that out.
So that's the first part. And the second part, which I'm sure you can answer, is you can actually go and listen to the song referred to in Killing Me Softly. But the following two songs are about songs that don't actually exist. So I'm going to give you two lyrics, one for each song. I want you to tell me the song's name and artist. The first one is, the Coffin Bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker 5. And the other one is, and we played the first thing that came to our heads, just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world. So those are two songs about two songs that don't actually exist. Do you know either of them?
I do. And Debbie does. Dana, do you have one?
Is one from that mockumentary that the Christopher Guest?
It is not. Okay. That's from The Mighty Wind.
No, not from The Mighty Wind, the earlier one.
Oh, this is Spinal Tap?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Go ahead.
So I believe the Spinal Tap songs, for the most part, you can listen to because they actually made those songs.
All right.
The Crypt Kicker 5, Debbie just gave me that and I knew it, is from Monster Mash by Bobby Pickett.
That's right. Yeah. Bobby Boris Pickett wrote a song called The Monster Mash. It's about a song called The Monster Mash. But when you're listening to The Monster Mash, you're not actually hearing the song The Monster Mash. You're hearing a song about a song called The Monster Mash.
Very meta.
It is meta. Yeah.
And read the other lyric again, would you?
And we played the first thing that came to our heads. It just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world.
All right. And let's see. All right. We better go to a call here. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
Hello.
Hi.
Don McLean.
It is Don McLean.
Good for you.
Oh, I knew the answer.
I'm assuming you're giving the answer and not just telling me that this is Don McLean calling, right?
No. I knew that. That's great rock and roll trivia.
Yes. Do you know what song it is? Because it's not American Pie. It's a different Don McLean song.
That he was singing that inspired it?
Uh-huh.
It's not American Pie? Oh, no, I don't know. I'm sorry.
Is it Vincent?
Okay. It's not Vincent either.
All right.
But he still gets a bell for Don McLean.
All right. Yes.
Good. But that's not what I called for, of course. Okay. I've got my question to ask. Are you ready?
Yes. Go ahead.
Which president lied in the first sentence of his inaugural address?
Yeah. Well, there's an obvious guess, and then you have to think about it a little bit more.
Is it only one?
Well, he's known for that. And actually, coincidentally, it relates to someone who two callers ago mentioned something about a president, and it relates to that.
So it relates to Grover Cleveland. Is this Teddy Roosevelt then? Or
no.
Okay.
Well, what was the... So are we eliminating Trump then?
Yes.
Okay. Then that's a tough one because – okay.
Was it one of those like this will be short and then it went on for an hour and a half?
Yeah.
No.
What would okay. – if you told us what the lie was, would that just give it away?
Okay. The line is – I am – I got to leave out the number. I am the blank man to take this oath.
Oh, so he gave the wrong number.
He gave the wrong number. You see, he was the blank presidency, but because of Grover Cleveland, his number, his count was off, because you don't count Grover Cleveland as one.
Right.
He said man, and right. So Grover Cleveland should have actually decreased the number.
Right.
Right. So it's whoever was after the second Grover Cleveland. I don't know my order. Dana, who was after Grover Cleveland part two?
That's William McKinley.
Okay.
Is that it?
Is it William McKinley? Hello?
No.
Okay.
It's more recent.
Oh, it's more recent. Well,
it's less a lie than a mistake, right?
Yeah.
In addition, I mean, if he had said, I am the blank presidency or the blank president, we'd say, okay, you know, but because he said, I'm the blank man, it's like, no, you can't count Grover Cleveland as one man.
Yeah. I'd only be guessing because that's a mistake almost any president could have made. So it's hard to know exactly who would have done it.
Well, I look at it this way. You're going to be president. There's going to be plenty of excuses for why you couldn't get things done. But when you're writing your inauguration speech, you know, at least make sure everything's right in your inauguration speech. In the first sentence, I have nothing against this person, by the way. It's just that kind of like when you had as much time as you wanted to get every word right in your inauguration speech, the first sentence.
Who was it? Tell us.
It was Barack Obama. Ah. I mean, Barack. Yeah, I said it right. Barack Obama.
You said it right.
Because he said, I am the 44th man to take this oath. No, he was the 43rd man.
Yeah, you're right.
Because he counted Grover Cleveland once. He should have counted him twice.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Sure thing.
All right. Bye-bye. And let's see. Lori, I think it's your turn.
All right. So this is a candy corn question. And it was guessed as one of the returned items on the candy. Didn't make that list, but it makes my list. I have three questions about candy corn. Number one is, what was its original name that they thought wouldn't be a big seller? Number two is the outer coating that makes it all shiny and cool looking. What's that outer coating made out of? And number three, I asked a variation of this before, but I like it. Why can't candy corn, what's the specific reason candy corn would not be eaten by Orthodox Jews? Okay, so I want the original name of candy corn. I want what the outer coating is made of, and I want why it can't be eaten by Orthodox Jews.
Well, I love candy corn. I may be the only one on earth that does, but I love it.
I'm with you. I think it's great.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
I have no complaints against it, and neither of you are Orthodox
but
Jews.
You have to be careful because there's very substandard candy corn, and then there's good candy corn. So it's
gourmet, the gourmet candy corn. Yeah.
And okay, so the coating, I'm trying to remember now. Is it confectioner's wax? Is something
it's
like
not.
That?
It is not.
The reason it can't be eaten by Orthodox Jews, is it the – I always get this wrong. Is it gelatin?
Yeah, I bet it's gelatin.
Is it?
It is. And okay. Because the gelatin for sure is going to be from unkosher animals and might even be from pigs. So that is the reason that it can't be eaten by Orthodox Jews or by vegans. I called once for a vegan friend, and we found out she can't eat it either. Okay, so we're looking for the outer coating and its original name.
Is it like candy teeth or something like that?
No, it's not candy teeth.
Isn't it like Indian – didn't they call it Indian corn or something like that?
Not on my list, not on the original.
So the coating – so it's not confectioner's wax.
Is it not
anything with wax in it?
Well, there's a resin on it, and it is a resin, and it's what the resin is made out of. That makes it all shiny.
Sometimes they use mineral oil in these things too.
There's mineral oil in the recipe, but that's not the outer coating.
Okay. All right.
What about cochineal?
Say it again.
Cochineal ground up beetle shell.
Oh,
That's close enough. It comes from, it's called a lac resin, and it comes from lac bugs, which are bright red insects that are found in and about Asia. So it is made from these crushed up bugs. Very good.
That's where the delicious crunchy taste comes
from. It is. It makes it a treat for everybody. Mm, yes. So we're looking just for the original name, and we'll leave that out there for our listeners.
All right. Thank you. All right. Just in the interest of time, I'm going to give you one quick question, then we'll go to calls. So I want to do this because it's sort of Halloween related, kind of. So these are horror. These are I'm looking for a name the films with these giant predators. In other words, these are basically 50s mutant predator movies. So the kind I used to come home and it'd be on it between 3:30 and 5 on Channel 7. Anybody who's around my age would know. So, okay. So what I'm going to describe the giant mutant predator, and I want you to tell me the name of the film, okay? They're all basically from the 50s.
How many?
Five. Not too many. All right. Number one is giant crabs, and I had a friend in college that had those. And so giant crabs is number one. Number two is radioactive grasshoppers, giant radioactive grasshoppers. Number three is a paleosaurus, but bigger than the usual paleosaurus.
Worse.
And number four is a giant radioactive prehistoric bird. And number five is the radioactive octopus, giant radioactive octopus. So
it's redundant to say radioactive, right? They all had that.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And so name these films in the 50s with these giant radioactive predators. So there's five here. Number one, the giant crabs. Number two, radioactive grasshoppers. Number three, paleosaurus. Number four, prehistoric bird, big enough to attack planes and stuff like that. And number five, a radioactive octopus. And just remember, they're all giants, so in their professions. So yeah. Anybody have a guess?
I do.
All right.
Go ahead, Kara.
Is the crab one just the crab monsters?
Yeah, I accept that. Attack of the Crab Monsters. Roger, one of Roger Corman's finest efforts from 1959. Yes.
I'm pretty sure the radioactive giant grasshoppers are from one of my favorite movies because I think it took place in Chicago. Is it The Beginning of the End?
Oh, very good. That's
yeah.
Tough.
I remember they were on the Wrigley building, and that would really creep me
out. Yeah. Radioactive grasshoppers, The Beginning of the End. You remember who the star of the movie was?
Oh, gosh.
A major TV star later on.
Well, it wasn't James Arness, was it?
No, though he did a couple of
He was in some of those.
It was
Gene Barry. How about Gene Barry?
Peter Graves. Peter
really?
Graves.
Really? Yeah. Oh, he did some of those. Oh, that's nice.
So we're still looking for the paleosaurus, the giant paleosaurus, not the small paleosaurus, and the giant prehistoric bird, and the giant radioactive octopus. So what 50s TV, or excuse me, what 50s... sci-fi films it goes from. And let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Never Matter. Hello? Are you there, caller? No?
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
It's Megan from San Francisco.
Hi, Megan.
I wasn't going to do a Halloween question, but since it's the theme of the night, I think I will. Somewhat related.
All right.
What are the top six pumpkin producing states in the U.S. The top six pumpkin producing states.
I think this
by
is
pounds,
pumpkins. I could be wrong about it. I might be thinking of something else. But is Illinois one?
Illinois is the top producing,
all right.
The top state. Yes,
good.
You got it on the first try.
What about California?
California is on the list as well.
And then where's Libby? Is that Indiana or is that Illinois? I'll go with Indiana just to guess it.
Indiana is also on the list.
Good.
Nice.
So.
And then the other ones are East Coast, right?
Hmm.
I would say one is East Coast and two are more of the more in the central region.
Like, is like Wisconsin or Iowa? Not Iowa, probably not Iowa, but like Wisconsin or something like that. Is that
more? Not Wisconsin, but you're getting close in thinking of that general region.
Yeah, I don't even mean Minnesota. What?
Try Minnesota? East. Go a little more east.
Michigan.
That makes sense.
Kira, yes. You should. How about Massachusetts for the East Coast state?
Massachusetts is not in the top six.
All right. So we have everything but, one or two? I don't know.
You're missing two.
Two, okay.
So one Midwest and one East Coast.
How about Kansas? Let's get them in the mix.
Kansas is not on the list. And I will say it's not, I wouldn't classify this as Midwest, but it's west of the Mississippi and south of the Mason-Dixon, if that helps.
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. You better fill in the blank.
The last two are Texas and Virginia.
Oh. Texas, I would not have
guessed. Texas.
Interesting. Okay. Huh. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your question.
Thanks. Have a good night.
All right. You too. And you're listening to Minds Over Matter. We're here every Sunday at 7. Feel free to ask us a non-Halloween question. They don't all have to be about Halloween. And that's fine. And we should quickly repeat. We should have done it a few minutes ago. It's my fault. But we should quickly repeat any questions that are still out there. So, Kira, start with you.
All right, so I gave you the titles of some Halloween-themed episodes of television shows. I'm looking for the titles of the television shows. So the Halloween-themed episodes are called It's a Plastic Pumpkin, Lewis Wang, Tina and the Real Ghost, The Ghost of A Chance, C-H-A-N-T-Z, and Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery. So four Halloween episodes of four television shows. We determined that Killing Me Softly was written about Don McLean, but I would like to know the Don McLean song that that she wrote about. And finally, you can actually listen to the song referred to in Killing Me Softly, but you can't listen to the song referred to in the song I'm asking about here, which is or has the lyric, and we played the first thing that came to our heads, just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world. So what's the name of that song?
All right. And
I'm looking for a question, which there are movies with people trick-or-treating, and one of them, there's a prominent scene where somebody's dressed as Yoda, and another one where somebody is, their disguise is a terrible drunken ghost, never been buried. That is how they were described to one of their parents. And then I'm also looking in the candy corn area, the original name of candy corn, and the only hint I'll give is the word candy and corn are not in the original title. Neither are those words. That's all I have right now.
Okay. And I found a article from Good Housekeeping Magazine not too long ago that lists the candy most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween. In other words, they have no interest in it at all. So what are the 10 candies most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween? So far, the only thing we have is circus peanuts. What are the other 9? If you guys want to take a quick guess, I'll give you each another guess.
I have a couple quick guesses. All right. How about red vines or red licorice?
Red vines are the best.
I know, none
of those.
And then how about, is it crows or black crows? There's some candy that's like black licorice.
Oh, man, that's a dollar store candy, too. Yeah. No, not that.
No. Mm-mm. Kira.
Yeah, I'll just guess Snickers.
Nope. And I gave you a list of predators, the giant radioactive predators with some 50s horror films or 50s sci-fi films. The ones we have left, I just want you to name the film, are the giant radioactive paleosaurus or the giant radioactive prehistoric bird or the giant radioactive octopus. So what films are those from? And then I had the clip, the 9-second clip. Can we play that? All right, we'll play that very quickly. Just name the movie and the two actors talking.
You'll think I'm crazy, but in a half an hour, the moon will rise and I'll turn into a wolf.
You and 20 million other guys.
Listen.
All right. And so what movie and what two actors are speaking there? And the two numbers to join us, area code 415-841-4134 or toll free 866-798-8255. Let's go to a call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Hi, it's Ed in Massachusetts.
Hi, Ed.
I used to like candy corn an awful lot until you guys just told me it was made out of bugs, and now I'm not so sure.
Sorry.
But no, I'm a big candy corn fan. I was going to guess the original name is Indian corn, too, which I think one of you guessed and got shot down. But the way I heard it was that the ones that are yellow, orange, and white are candy corn, and the ones that are brown, orange, and white are called Indian corn. But otherwise, they're the same thing. But I guess neither one of those is the answer. I got a couple of guesses.
One of them has that really horrible maple taste, which I can't stand. It's not really candy corn. I think that's the brown
one. I guess if you sit down and chow too many of them, it gets overly sweet, but I like them in general. All right, the candies that the kids don't want. First of all, I don't think I ever met a candy I didn't want, so I don't understand this question. But one of them, I'm going to guess Whoppers, the malted milk balls.
That's a good guess. But no, it's not one of the ten.
Or Mary Jane or Bit of Honey?
Yes, Mary Jane's and Bit of Honey, both.
Nice.
I love those, but I thought they were on the list.
Oh, man, those will take your fillings out with no trouble at all.
Well, yeah, you got to eat them carefully.
Yeah.
Let me see. This just came to me when you were repeating the question. The movie with someone dressed as Yoda, and it all of a sudden came to me, and I remember laughing in the theater when the moment came up. It was E.T.
It was, yeah. Good. It was Steven Spielberg's homage to George Lucas.
With E.T.
Correct.
And I think it was so funny because that Star Wars movie was just coming out at that time.
Yeah, and Spielberg was friends with Lucas, so he did it sort of as an in-joke for that. And it's adorable. Very good.
And then your sound clip is that, I'm sure it is, Lou Costello. And is the movie Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein?
Yeah, of course it is. Yes. And that's Lon Chaney Jr. and Lou Costello. Good
Great
job.
Great movie.
Yes.
Those are all my guesses, and I'm three bells better than I was last week, so I'm happy. Last night I saw a bad old movie. It's kind of corny. Mighty Joe Young.
Right.
And that prompted my question for tonight. I've got five movie titles, and I want you to tell me what they all have in common. Mighty Joe Young, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Ten Commandments, Mary Poppins, and Forrest Gump.
What do the titles have in common?
No, what do the movies?
Oh. So Mighty Joe Young, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Ten Commandments. What are the other two?
Mary Poppins and Forrest Gump.
So is this somebody who was involved in the production of all of them, that kind of thing, in the writing or art design? Is it like that?
No.
Okay.
Is there an actor in all of these?
No, nope, not a common actor or any staff member, as far as I know.
Has Dana talked about hating all five of them?
Yeah, I definitely don't like Forrest, yeah. Anything to do with stop motion or Mighty Joe Young has that stop motion animation, but that's the others don't, that I believe.
You're correct that Mighty Joe Young was a stop motion movie, and that's getting close.
Is it something about special effects that were either unique to them? Okay. So Forrest Gump was one of the ones where they kind of digitalized when they took off Gary Sinise's legs. That was digitalized. Mary Poppins had Dick Van Dyke dancing with animated characters. It wasn't the first time.
So is it the same person in charge of the special visual effects?
No, not the same person.
Okay.
But am I in the right track? Kind of guess, is it the type of animation that was done?
No, not type of animation.
Okay. But you said
I think
it's
actually maybe easier and more obvious than you're making it right now.
Was it just that they had groundbreaking anime or groundbreaking visual effects the first time?
They did, and therefore
were they all
for
nominated?
Those movies? Oh,
I'm sorry. No, I was going to. Were they all nominated for Academy Award for special or for special effects or special visual effects?
They were all nominated, and
they all won.
They won.
They all won the Academy Award for Special Effects.
All right, there you go.
Oh, nice. Even That's Mighty it. Joe Young.
All right.
Yeah. Even Mighty Joe Young.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Ed. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Over Matter.
Howdy, this is Tom in Southern California.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. Candy corn was originally called Archibald Leach.
Good guess. not accurate, but really a fun one.
That was a long ways to go for that. But,
yeah, really.
Yeah. All right. It's a plastic pumpkin. Lewis Wang, is that fresh off the boat?
Yep, it is.
Yep. Okay, Tina and the Real Ghost, is that Bob's Burgers?
Of course.
Good job on that.
It's two bells.
Corn's Groovy, yeah, I'm not sure about these others. Corn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery, is that like Mike Tyson Mysteries?
It's not, no.
Sounds like. Okay, and Ghost of a Chance, Golden Girls, I don't know how to guess that.
No.
Mm-mm. Either that or Canon, maybe. No.
No.
Okay, Toss Candy. How about Charleston Chew?
No. Oh, those are good.
Yeah, they're great.
Jolly Ranchers?
No.
Now and Laters?
No.
Jujubes?
No.
Those candies that belong in cardigan sweater pockets, Werther's?
No, but one of them is a candy that you might find in a cardigan sweater pocket.
Oh, and wax lips might be.
No, not wax lips.
No. Okay.
Certs.
That's all I got. Let's see, I'll ask, what city has over 70% of the rents for, you know, apartments and houses in this city all end on September 1st?
Say that again, once more.
It's what American city, in what American city do 70% of leases end on September 1st?
When you say American, do you mean U.S. or is Canada also involved here?
U.S.
Okay. Because I know Montreal does a moving day, but I thought that was July.
Huh.
It's known as Christmas, or a neighborhood named Christmas.
Interesting.
In this city.
I have no idea. No, I've never even heard of that.
Major city?
Major city, yeah. It's actually, it was, I guess, first known as Alston Christmas, which is a neighborhood in this city.
Huh. No.
No.
No, nope. It's Boston.
Oh.
Right.
Because of the students. And known as Alston Christmas because people, you know, put their junk out on the sidewalk so people can go pick up new furniture or slightly used furniture, things like that. Not quite a Halloween question, but as close as I can get. All right, thanks. Great show.
Thank you, Tom. All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, Dana, is one of the candies kids reject coffee nips? Debbie's guessing that.
No. Coffee nips?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, not coffee nips.
Yes.
But it's one of them is an old person's candy, what we used to think of as an old person's candy. Let's put it that way. Because
is it any kind of gum on the list?
Yes, there is one. Oh. There's one.
Chiclets?
No.
That's an old person's thing. Yeah. Beeman's gum?
No.
Okay. But it's a certain brand that we'd know, like Juicy Fruit or something?
Oh, yeah. It's a certain brand. Yeah. Okay. And next call. Hi, you're on Minds Ever Matter.
I think that's me.
Yes.
It's Bill in El Cerrito.
Hi, Bill.
Hey, one quick guess, and then we'll go to the question. The octopus, was that, it came from beneath the sea?
Yes, it is. Came from beneath the sea. And if I recall, didn't the octopus have, like, one less arm than normal octopuses do?
I think it's like, you know, the way they depict cartoon characters with four fingers or something like that.
And it was the Golden Gate Bridge, too. It menaced.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, yes, good job.
Okay. Back to the question and last week's question. So, what two icons of 20th century arts ruptured their once close friendship because one of them got married?
You asked this last week, and we told you to call back.
Oh.
Yeah, and now you're living to regret it, right?
Yeah. So what two icons of 20th century art? Are these two artists from the same country?
Yes.
If you told us the country, would that give it away?
Well, actually, no. Actually, I take that back. No.
Okay. They're not from the same country?
No.
Okay. All right.
And are they
Are they painters? Are they that kind of artist?
No, neither one.
Okay. Is one of them Andy Warhol? Because this sounds like
No, it's not.
Okay.
And I seem to recall last week, though I could be wrong, did I guess Picasso is one of them?
No, and you didn't guess, and it's not Picasso.
Okay, all right. All right.
And was the reason was it considered a betrayal because they were sexually attracted to each other? Was that part of it?
Betrayal is part of it, but not sexual attraction to one another.
Yeah.
Oh, was it the same person? Did they fight over the same person?
They did. Well, you could say that, but not for the same purpose.
Was this the person that one of them married? Was it an artist's muse? In other words, was it somebody who had inspired both of them?
No. I would have to say no.
Was one of them was this person a benefactor to one of them?
Again, I'm going to have to say no. I'll tell you that. I'll give you a little hint. Both of them had previously been married multiple times.
Oh, is this an ex then? Did one of them marry the other's ex?
No, but you're getting closer.
Married one of them's relative, sister thing, or mother?
Child.
You're on track.
On track, child? One of them married
daughter.
Okay.
Yeah, daughter.
Married a daughter.
Yeah. Right? Who was that?
Oh, God. Don't know. No idea.
But they're not painters. Neither one's a painter.
We're almost out of time. I guess you're
pretty
close.
Oh, yeah, we are. We need
okay.
a hint.
Eugene O'Neill and Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, yeah. Uno O'Neill. Okay.
He married Uno O'Neill. Yeah, Chaplin did. Yeah. Oh. I didn't know that they didn't speak over that. That's interesting. Yeah. Had they been friends before?
O'Neill never spoke to either one of them for the rest of his life.
Mm. Wow.
All right. Thank you very much.
And he disowned Una. Of course, he also disowned her brother.
Oh. Yeah. Interesting.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry. We're almost out of time. I apologize. Thank you. And let's see. All right. I guess we better clean up here. Okay. Kira, start with you.
All right. The Ghost of a Chance was a Halloween episode of The Dick Van Dyke Show. And Korn's Groovy Pirate Ghost Mystery is South Park. Killing Me Softly with His Song was written about Don McLean singing the song Empty Chairs. And the lyric, and we played the first song that came to our heads, just so happened to be the best song in the world. It was the best song in the world, is a song by Tenacious D called Tribute. And that's all I've got.
All right.
I have an Halloween scene where somebody is described as a terrible drunken ghost that's never been buried. Dana, did you know this one?
No. It sounds familiar, but no.
It is. It's in Meet Me in St. Louis. Meet Me in St. Louis.
Right.
When Tootie goes out and they say, what are you dressed as? And then the original name of Candy Corn, and you could see why they changed it, was Chicken Feed. I don't think anybody thought Chicken Feed would be a big seller. That's it.
All right. And the film is with the giant radioactive predators from the 50s. The ones we have left are the Paleosaurus from the giant behemoth. Not just the behemoth, by the way, the giant behemoth. So, and the prehistoric giant radioactive prehistoric bird, that's the giant claw. The candy most likely to be thrown out by kids after Halloween is from Good Housekeeping. The whole list, Necco wafers, atomic fireball, circus peanuts, hot tamales, Mary Janes, pixie sticks, bit of honey, Smarties, double bubble, and the old person's candy I was referring to is the butterscotch wafers.
Hey, you owe me a bell because I said Necco wafers and
did you
said
no. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I heard
there it. There you go. Okay. If we didn't get your call, I do apologize. Please remember that Minds Over Matter is here every Sunday at 7 p.m. If you haven't voted yet, please go out and do that. It's a great week to do it. And I hope you will join us next Sunday for our last pre-election show. So please join us next Sunday at 7. My thanks to our panelists. That's Kira Pace, technical editor, and Lori Fisher from Diablo Valley College. I've been your moderator, Dana Rodriguez. And my thanks to Debbie Kennedy for handling the board and phones. Have a great week, everybody. Please, and have a great Halloween as well. Please join us next Sunday at 7. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.